Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
One quarter squash? Aye. One quarter? That's literally insane, Stephen. Episode 225 of 20 Minute Tim's flagship podcast. And with me this week is Melly.
Yes.
And Stephen.
That's right, glad to be here on this fine Monday night. Another fine week for the old tick.
Oh, another tremendous week for Celtic. There's a lot to talk about, a lot to look forward to.
We're bringing big tick energy tonight, Jamie.
Oh, I like it. This is the podcast with BTE, big tick energy. First of all, we need to do a bit of housekeeping. That, of course, means I need to plug the Patreon. The Patreon is a subscription service where you can support your favourite Celtic podcast, this one, in exchange for extra content. And just to give you an idea what we do on Celtic match days, this is how the Celtic match day shapes up on 20 Minute Tim's Patreon. 24 hours before the game, Ryan Brown gives us his opposition and focus article. Then 45 minutes before kickoff, me, Stephen and Melly are live and in Technicolor. The cameras get switched on and we bring you the build-up to the game. That's exclusive video content only to 20 Minute Tim's Patreon. Then immediately after the match, we take to the microphones to produce the raw, emotional reaction podcast immediately after the game. And even before big games like coming up against Riga this week, we have those opposition teams scouted, so you have in-depth knowledge of what Celtic are coming up against, and that is what your match day experience looks like on 20 Minute Tim's Patreon. As well as that, we've got loads of Celtic fantastic features and documentary podcast series. Ask us anything. There's loads of terrific content out there. Check it out, patreon.com/20minutetims, and all the details are there. Stephen.
Crucially, Jamie, you've missed out the best part of the preview show, the live preview show that we do on Patreon before the game. Nary a Chris Boyd or Andy Walker to be seen.
No.
Nowhere near it do you find a Chris Boyd or an Andy Walker. It's just us. What's the slogan we've been when hit out with recently?
Bin Boyd and get with
boys.
The boys. Yeah. Aye, that's what you need to do. You need to bin Boyd and back the boys. That's us. Look, there's a lot of football to discuss, as we mentioned at the top of the show, but you know, there's been quite a lot of news and rumours, and we've not had like a wee gossip session about Celtic in the longest time. It's all been very uniform and all that, and I noted with interest this week, guys, that Chris Commons once again has been in the news, being honestly super positive about Celtic.
Oh, is he out there just saying stuff, is he? Is he just hashtag just saying stuff?
It's honestly, I don't know what gimmick Chris Commons is going for, but it's like a relentless wall of negativity every time that guy's in the press talking about Celtic, and he's at it once again. Yeah. But he's made a complete... Have you seen what I'm talking about?
Yeah, about Elie Nussey.
About Elie Nussey. He's made a complete tit of himself once again. So I think the point... This is how Chris Commons' columns work, right? Some journalists...
Chris Columns. That's great.
Yeah, Chris Columns.
He's missed out a marketing opportunity there.
This is how it works. I'm guaranteed this is how it works. Some arsehole journalist somewhere who doesn't like Celtic, right, writes a really thought-provoking, telling it how it is article and emails it to Chris Commons and goes, hey, Chris, in this piece, what I've said is that the Celtic fans are pricks and Neil Lennon is blah, blah, blah. Do you want it? And Chris Commons will just email back, okay, and then it goes out into the press and then Chris Commons gets his $5,000 check or whatever he gets. So this week, he said, Celtic fans only criticise Greg Taylor because they pine for Tierney and they think that, you know, we should be giving Greg Taylor a wee break. Stop being so harsh on Greg Taylor. Now, we three are, at this point, expert Celtic podcasters at least. Yeah, not correct, experts on Celtic, but expert Celtic podcasters.
In that we can turn mics on and record our voices, yes, yeah, and put it out to the world, correct,
literally,
yes, we're experts at that.
Literally anyone could do this, right? But we've been doing it for a long time. Stephen, you first. Does Greg Taylor get a hard time off the Celtic fans? An undue hard time?
No, I don't think so. Everyone was screaming for Greg Taylor to get into the team. When Bolingoli was having his woes back last season, we saw about 26, 27, 28 games in a row of Bolingoli. Everyone, including on this podcast, was that, I want Greg Taylor to get a run. We want to make him in. Even if he plays badly for a few games, we want at least a chance at him. Now, the problem is, we've now reached... maybe not as many games as Bolingoli, but we've now get a fairly good sample size of Greg Taylor now, in which we can make our mind about what kind of player he is. The Tierney thing, I don't buy in the slightest. I think that's complete garbage from Commons. I could maybe believe it if I was like, say if I was like 13 and I grew up with Kieran Tierney being the left back and I was gutted about it and he'd moved on and I just couldn't get over it. But that's not the case. That Kieran Tierney's been gone quite a long time now and I don't really compare it. That's like saying we give Carlton Cole a hard time because we can't get over John Hartson. It's total bollocks. Like, the two things barely connect. Everybody's well over the Kieran Tierney thing. Maybe not the team. Maybe we're still desperately trying to improve him from a performance and tactical perspective. But I don't think any fan is watching Greg Taylor thinking, "Oh, if only we was Kieran Tierney." He's playing really well. He's been brilliant. But I don't like him because he's not Kieran Tierney. That's just juvenile from Commons.
But we'll see it when we come at the games, Melly. But I mean, it's starting to look for me like Greg Taylor is, as Celtic improve the team and as the Celtic team gradually, albeit get better, Greg Taylor for me is starting to look like the outlier, the one who's not as good as the rest of the team.
Yeah, you're definitely right there.
Cheers, man.
First and last time tonight. We look at the team and you just see that glaring left-hand side. We need somebody in. Greg Taylor's playing sort of out of necessity right now because there's literally no one else that can play there unless you put James Forrest out there. But we've seen that doesn't really work. The team's very lopsided. Commons is just, he is just saying stuff. Celtic fans, don't compare him to Kieran Tierney, I feel. I think we just look to the other side of the pitch and see Frimpong or El Hamid. Good, competent players who give you 7 out of 10 but can also give you 8 or 9 some weeks, especially Frimpong. He's really pushing on this season, the games in the past week. Whereas with Taylor, you maybe get a 6 or a 7, then it's back down to a 5, up to a 7. He's not consistent and he's not good enough either. We've Stephen said that him and Bowen-Goy played the same amount of league games in there, and at times last season Johnny Hayes was keeping them out of the team, and Johnny Hayes wasn't a very good footballer. So we need to improve there. We can't go into this season with just one guy who is Greg Taylor, because I don't think he's good enough. He's fine, but fine's not good enough for me.
I think the main issue with Greg Taylor, as far as I see it, and as far as I'm sure most Celtic fans see it, is that he doesn't go beyond. His delivery's not great, albeit he's got 4 assists this season. He's not got a trick to beat a man. He's not got a burst of pace to beat a man. Especially in this formation.
It relies on the wing backs.
And Chris Commons' defence, I suppose, of Greg Taylor, he actually tried to also say that, you know, Celtic fans should be pointing the finger at Mo Elianoussi because it's Mo Elianoussi's performances that haven't been good enough. And Chris Commons went on to say, Mo Elianoussi excelled last season playing as a winger, cutting in from the left. You can afford to do that when you've got a full back bombing past you on the overlap. So it seems to me, in his defence of Mo Elianoussi, what he's actually done is criticise Celtic's fullback on the same side as Mo Elianoussi, which is Greg Taylor. So what he's done here is he's went, Mo Elianoussi was good when Greg Taylor's good, but Mo Elianoussi's pish now because Greg Taylor can't do the overlap, which, to be fair to Commons, is correct.
I'm struggling to fully make
I'm talking about the
though.
Mechanics of the position here. I'm not talking about his opinion on either player.
Yeah, I'm struggling to fully make the connection, though, between, you know, Greg Taylor not playing well and Elianoussi being the same. They can't, since the switch to 3-5-2, they've barely been on the same pitch together. Elianoussi doesn't really fit into that as far as it goes at the moment. He hasn't been in such good form as to force Celtic to make allowances to get him back into the team. Right, I accept that. I'm not saying he's wrong about Elianoussi's performances. I don't think he's been good enough either, Reykjavik aside. But I'm struggling to make the jump between how, you know, don't focus on Greg Taylor, who is playing every single week and, as Melly said, given us a 5, a 4, a 7 occasionally, and Elianoussi, who isn't playing. Those two things, to me, they're not mutually exclusive. Both of those things can exist at the same time. Elianoussi hasn't been good enough, but I don't really see how we should take away from a player who is playing and who we can judge on his performance to judge someone who isn't playing there. I'm kind of struggling with that one.
It's because it doesn't make sense, and it's just one of these opinions that Chris Coleman gets paid for. And what I want to know is why it always has to be relentlessly negative with him. And I know what he's trying to do. This is how bad it is. He's trying to be Chris Boyd, but failing. You know, Chris Boyd. You know, Chris Boyd always. I know Chris Boyd will come out and make some sort of controversial statement, and you know, to be fair to Chris Boyd, and this is one thing you'll know here in this podcast ever again, it quite often achieves it. You know, Chris Boyd's goal is to come out, make a statement that gets everyone talking about Chris Boyd that weekend. More often than not, he achieves it. Chris Commons is trying the same thing and failing. And it's cringeworthy to watch. It is cringeworthy.
Chris Boyd without the without the commitment, without the conviction in his opinions, right?
Chris Commons is probably one of the guys that will go, Celtic should play 3-5-2, it worked so well last season. And then when we go 3-5-2, and El Yunusi doesn't really fit into that right now, well, El Yunusi's not getting a game, is he good enough? What is it, Chris? What is it?
It's just one of these rent-a-gub comments, and it's bizarre to me how many ex-Celtic fans in the media, ex-Celtic players rather than the media, are so quick to be critical about the team. I mean, even Neil Lennon, his pal, is the manager. So you'd think that would compel him to be somewhat positive or even realistic, but obviously it's no enough for bald Chris.
The thing is, I'm not like particularly sensitive about these things. I don't. If there was a guy out there just being relentlessly negative but had some rhyme or reason to it to make me actually listen to what he said, I'm fine with that. If a guy has a constructive opinion that just happens to be negative towards the team, fine, I'll deal with it. But could you at least cobble together some sort of like coherent point if you could maybe manage that? He's not even the type of guy who can make a compelling argument that would make me sit up and go, you know, do you know what? I don't like what you're saying, but I appreciate where you're coming from. I think Celtic could possibly learn from your opinion, Chris Commons, but I don't think I'm ever going to come to that point.
These sorts of things are just another reason why old media is dying, and you should definitely support your pals in new media because you'll definitely get well thought out opinion. At least 30% of the time you're going to get well thought out opinion on this podcast.
And that's a 10-minute plug for ourselves there. Only brought up Chris.
Yeah, duped you. There you go. You thought we were talking about Chris Commons there. We were plugging the Patreon that whole time. Look, the transfer window's come to a close. I think it shuts on the 5th of October. That has absolutely flown in. And we'll need to do some sort of recap of Celtic's transfer business because we've low-key spent an absolute fortune on transfers. Yeah. But there's still sort of rumblings about players coming and going. Celtic are obviously looking at Alfie Doughty, the Charlton left-back. I don't think there's any denying that Neil Lennon wants a new left-back. He said as much, we're going to bring a new left-back in. I think the worry just now is that no one has quite left yet, and the two names that are on the tip of everyone's tongue are Christopher Ayer and Odson Edouard. I think Neil Lennon made some pretty interesting comments about Odson Edouard midweek in the press, but it's Ayer that's once again merely linked with AC Milan. Now, I've heard on the grapevine that Celtic have told Ayer that if someone comes forward with 15 million cash, no ifs, no buts, no deals, nothing, if they've got 15 million cash, that's what it's going to take for Ayer to get the deal done, feeling that he's going to remain a Celtic player when the window closes. Couple of weeks left of the transfer window, do you think Ayer's going to be on the move?
Out of the sort of the sellable assets we've got, he's the one that maybe I'd be least disappointed going. I think he's a decent player. I think he will go on to be a decent player. But if the rumblings are true and he wants to go, I think he can be replaced. We've seen Julian's a good defender if you go out and spend the money. Shane Duffy's in now. If we get rid of Ayer, I think we can then go out and get a left-sided centre-back, and it just brings a lot more better balance to the team. That would sort that out, and I think we probably, I don't feel it, but maybe the board will, that they need to sell a player to balance off sort of not getting in the Champions League and spend a lot of money, and out the four big assets and Edward, Christie and Cham and Ayer, I think the one I'd be least disappointed with going is Ayer. But we've heard rumblings that it's going to be AC Milan are preparing a bid. I've never heard this patter that teams are preparing bids. You either bid or you don't. Where does this come from?
Overall, I think I agree with that. I think if you accept that Celtic are likely to lose a player, not every year, but every maybe couple of years, we'll probably lose a big sale, possibly exacerbated by the fact that we haven't qualified for the Champions League again, and you know the current situation, TM and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think we can all kind of broadly get on board with the fact that Celtic will sell players every so often. Ayer, if it's going to be Ayer, then I think I'm mostly all right with it. The thing is, I think replacement is, I know I say this every window, but replacement is going to be the absolute key here because we can't afford to lose quality. As many issues and problems we've had with Ayer over the seasons, we know he's a flawed defender, but he is ultimately a good one and probably will get better. We can't afford to lose any type of quality in the team this season and not replace it. We just can't do it. So as long as Celtic are going to bring in a defender and we're not going to be, you know, messing about with it, as much as a rate near Beaton as a player, I don't think he's the answer. I don't think we can just sell Ayer and promote Beaton into the team on a more regular basis. Shane Duffy is a great start to, you know, consolidating that defensive bit, but we simply must bring someone in. Ayer, I think, will go on to be a very good player somewhere, but my feelings about him at the moment, I think he's had a couple of really good games recently, but I think I wish Christopher Iyer was like a video game character, but somebody else, but somebody else was controlling him. If you know what I mean, like yeah. he has all the tools, all the abilities, but sometimes is a little bit unable to meld that all together to be the finished article. I know he's still young, you know, he's still young, but he's an experienced player. He's an experienced player now, a full international and all that jazz. So I think overall, wouldn't like to see him go because he is a good player, and yeah. I never want to see any good players leave the club. But if you're, you know, gun in my head, if it's going to be Iyer or Edouard, there's absolutely no choice for me. That's an easy decision.
The rumour mill's been on fire with talk of Jimmy McLean coming in, Melly James McLean. yeah, Stoke player. Now, let's forget who the man is at the moment. Let's look at the player. Is that the sort of player that Celtic could use then now? Is that the sort of player that we're lacking? He plays along that whole left-hand side, more attacking, admittedly, but can play up and down the whole left-hand side. Obviously, a Celtic fan. Would that
Never.
Be a wise
move?
Totally. Would that be a wise move for Celtic to go and get him?
Yeah, look, I've been very vocal in the fact that Celtic should do it just for the sheer patter of it, because it will be phenomenal. It will destroy them mentally. He will be living rent-free, imagine, if he plays or scores at Ibrox.
Interested to see how, if fans come back, how Shane Duffy will get treated.
Oh, lovely. Applause on every game, yeah.
Yeah.
Poppy season, gentlemen. That'll be good fun.
Oh, my God, it's going to be brilliant. But is Jane McLean a sort of player that Celtic need, Melly?
I think he is. He's played in that position before. As you said, he can fill in at left-back, but I think left-wing-back is the ideal position for him. The guy's got the engine to get up and down there. He's played in tournaments for Republic Ireland. He's played well, and he's a workhorse. He's a workhorse with a good engine, but crucially, he's got a good cross on him as well, and that's what we need. We've got Frimpong down that right-hand side, who's got the pace, who's got the drive, who gets in and out and gets round players and can cut back. I sort of liken it to O'Neill's team. I know it's a long time ago, but down that right hand side you had the pace Nagat, and down the left hand side you sort of the guile and the technique of Thompson, where he could just get out his feet and whip it in quickly. I think that'd be a really good balance to get somebody on the left hand side doing that, and just the absolute bonus would be if it's James McLean.
Stephen, if James McLean comes in and plays that position though, is there space for Mo Elyounoussi? I suppose Elyounoussi could play as a 10 or a shadow striker, but looking at the current Celtic setup, would you be willing to say, right, well, do you know what, Elyounoussi, you're just going to have to take your place on the bench for the time being, because James McLean is more useful as a player to us than you are at the moment?
It's difficult for him. It's going to be very difficult for Elyounoussi to get into the team, because, yes, he can probably play other positions. I wouldn't stick him at left wing back for anything. I don't think he's suited to that. So James McLean would most certainly be first choice there, should he come in. You could say he plays number 10, but at whose expense? He could play as a shadow striker, but I'd definitely rather have a Yeti in there and alongside Edouard, either swapping places, one just off the other. I'd rather see that than have Elyounoussi in the team. Elyounoussi could do this, but I'm just going off his current form, and I can't really see a way back into the team for him for now. But it's up to him. It's up to him to justify any forced change of formation. See if Elyounoussi is so good. See if he impresses in the times he comes off the bench and is so good that Neil Lennon and John Kennedy think, do you know what, I'm going to need to change the formation to get this guy in the team, then that can only be a good thing. We need options, of course, but it's going to be difficult for him because players are starting to come into form and Elyounoussi finds himself a little bit on the outside looking in for now.
These things will always settle down once the transfer window shuts and we get a sort of decent run at it games-wise. When you think back to this time, this time last season, maybe a bit earlier before the transfer window shut, Celtic's starting 11 was much different from the team that ended the season, and you thought, that's it, because it's a long season, players will come in and out, players will hit form, players will come back, players will get injured. And Elyounoussi, as we spoke about before, injured from December right up to coming back after the extended break, so it's not as if he's had a lot of football recently. So players will come in and out. The team that's starting right now isn't going to be the team for the full season.
James McLean, yes, I admired Melly's commitment to this Pater signing. And in fairness, he's not jumping on the bandwagon here.
This has been years.
He's been campaigning for this for years to get James McLean to Celtic. His biggest supporter, you might say.
I only own one strip with James McLean 11 in the back.
As a player, yes, I think he could be good. I know that you know, people kind of sneer at the championship and all that down there, but we've had a lot of success from there before. But a lot of Celtic's best signings over the last 10, 12 years have come from the championship. Notably, like Gary Hooper. People forget Moussa Dembele was in the championship. So was Patrick Roberts, you know, Joe Lett, et cetera, et cetera. There were so many signings, Griffiths, Commons. So we've had a lot of success from there before, so I wouldn't go writing it off. I know he is a little bit away from the top flight footballers that he's not really played there for a while, but he's still playing international football as far as I'm aware as well. So I definitely wouldn't be against it. I think it would be a huge upgrade on Taylor in terms of his attacking ability. And as cruel as this sounds to say, I think Greg Taylor is a bit of a wee guy at times. And I know he can't really help that. He's small and he's slight of stature. There's not much he can do about that. But he gets bullied quite a lot. See, you give Greg Taylor credit. I know I've not really been his biggest fan, his biggest cheerleader by any means. But he is getting forward and he is creating goals. But it just doesn't happen often enough, and there's an awful lot of giving the ball away. There's an awful lot of being pushed off the ball far too easily. I don't think you get that with James McLean. Given the choice of an Irish left-sided midfielder slash kind of defender, I'd love Robbie Brady. Love Robbie Brady up the road at Celtic Park, but James McLean, close second for me.
There's no doubt. I mean, James McLean is quality. He's been playing Premier League football for a number of years now. He dipped into the Championship, obviously, but he's a good pedigree. He knows what it's about. And you know, with Duffy and McLean, these are things that I normally think, like, wouldn't it really matter in football? You know, if you're a diehard Celtic fan in any other season, that doesn't really matter. But honestly, this season was so much at stake. See, having guys that knows what it means in the team, that could genuinely be the extra 5 or 10% that gets you through in a game. Yeah. Not some guy that's going to come on loan and disappear back to whatever club he played for last season and no really care, he's not here for that. But guys like James McLean, Shane Duffy, Scott Brown, McGregor, Forrest, and even Neil Lennon, even up to the manager, as Dermot Desmond actually said recently in an interview, that, you know, it's important to him that Neil Lennon is a true Celtic fan, true and true, as it was quoted in The Athletic, which I can only assume, Stephen, that you pointed out as well, that they misinterpreted him saying he's a Celtic fan through and through. The Athletic wrote true and true, T-R-U-E, T-R-U-E.
You know, I like the small details when it comes to these things, but that really got me. If people don't know what we're talking about, as Jamie said, they had a rare interview in The Athletic in the last few days, Dermot Desmond, where he spoke about a wide range of things, but he did note that Neil Lennon is a Celtic fan true and true. Now, I read that and I thought, that's not a saying. You don't say, oh, I'm a Celtic fan, true and true. But then I thought, they've heard him and his Irish accent saying through and through, haven't they? Yeah, he's a Celtic man, true and true. And they've typed it up as through and through. I bust out laughing at that. But anyway, it was a good interview. I'd advise people to go and check it out. But it does make that point. It does make the point about, you know, people who know. And we've scoffed at that before. We scoffed at the line of, you know, he knows the city and all that kind of stuff back in the Showergate era. But you are right that there's the marginal gains thing. I know it's not the be-all and end-all to be a Celtic fan. You know, he knows the club, gets it. You know, Celtic fan, true and true and all that. Right? It's not the be-all and end-all. But if you have a good player, a very good player who's an upgrade on what you've got, plus that extra 5%, if he's willing to, you know, the big cliche, run through brick walls and all that stuff, then that's when I don't turn my nose up at it. That's not when I roll my eyes about somebody going, oh, he's a Celtic man, he gets it and all that. Because where it is important is if you add that to an already good player, and that I'm all for that.
You're telling me that it's no stunner time when Neil Lennon, Shane Duffy and James McLean lift the 10 in a row. Jesus Christ,
I will combust, man.
That was actually quite a good interview for Dermot Desmond. He made some interesting points about Celtic in Europe as well. Did you see that?
Yeah. He spoke about the psychological barrier.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big language he was using, where he talked about being a block in Europe, and it can only be a psychological thing because it's not down to personnel or talent. And it's a big thing to say in public, that... I know it's not quite the same as, remember when James Tavernier basically came out and threw him and his own team under the bus in his programme notes by saying we're all shitebags, basically. It's not quite like that, because Dermot Desmond isn't involved in a plain sense, but to come out and say that there's obviously something going wrong in the psychological aspect, and that's why we keep failing to qualify for the group stages of the Champions League, then it's certainly worth listening to. I know Neil Lennon was on Sports Sound a couple of nights ago as well, talking about sports psychology, so it's obviously something that they're they're starting to embrace in the club. That again, it's marginal gains, isn't it? See, if you've looked at everything else. Well, there is that. But if you've looked at everything else, and if we all agree, which I'm sure we can, that Celtic shouldn't be losing to a club like Ferencváros based on talent or the personnel, then it's worth looking at these things. And if Celtic are doing that, then, as you say, Mel, it's a wee bit late for that. But it's progress if we're starting to induce things like that now.
It's quite interesting because Neil Lennon, he also was on an interview with an Irish YouTube channel. I've mentioned it before a wee while ago, and he was talking about, and specifically Odson Edward, that, you know, after the game nowadays, players don't like to just be shouted at and told you made that mistake. They want to see the analysis and why the mistake happened and how it happened and how they can fix it. And he singled out Odson Edward for someone who doesn't particularly like criticism. You know, you just have to treat him well, you have to treat him nicely, be careful with him. He doesn't like a rollicking or a rocket. And Edward... Yeah. Obviously has missed a couple of games for Celtic this season. He was benched at the weekend there, but he did play for France. And Neil Lennon was in the press saying that that Edward struggled a bit. Now, I don't think he meant physically. I that's not really what I picked up the interview. I could be wrong. He said he was away with France recently and played 290 minutes with them. He's missed the previous three games for us before that, and I spoke to him on Friday and he was struggling, so you have to look after the player. Hopefully he'll be fresh for Thursday, which is a very important game for us. He's not causing any problems behind the scenes. He was honest enough to say he was struggling, and I take his word on that. I just wonder what that could possibly mean. It doesn't seem to me like we're talking about a player here who's fatigued physically or has carrying that knock, does it, Stephen?
No, Neil Lennon has used the word fatigue when it comes to Odson Edward recently, when it came to explaining why he wasn't in the team for a recent game. Was that Livingston, I think it was, when he was left out of the starting lineup? But I do look at the language he's using there, Lennon, things like he's not causing any problems behind the scenes. That's quite an odd thing to say.
Aye, because that's what I thought.
We're not going to assume that unless you say something like that. I don't think any of us had it in our heads that, that Odson Edward's a troublemaker, so he is. He's a poisonous apple. If that's a term, I don't know. A poisonous apple, a bad apple, a rotten egg behind the scenes. I wouldn't have thought that. So it's quite an alarming thing to say, because I don't know. Maybe things are afoot. Maybe things are afoot when it comes to transfers and all that. And he's a little bit distracted. He's had his head turned a little bit. That would be natural, because a player as good as Odson Edward is going to attract attention, whether we like it or not. We have to accept that. I don't know if there's been anything in all the recent stuff about Arsenal.
According to Neil Lennon, no official bids, no interest that they're aware of.
That's fine. But it wouldn't be the first time in the last few months or so where we heard potentially that Odson Edward was, at the very least, open to a transfer away from Celtic. So I just hope that it's not what Neil Lennon is saying there. Again, I can only go on what he said, and I can try and read between the lines a wee bit. I just hope it's not that his head's down a wee bit, because he's starting to think, I don't know, I've kind of done it here a wee bit.
Aye, that's my worry. Yeah. My worry there is that he's struggling to get motivated and that sort of thing.
Also, we can't forget that Neil Lennon very recently, after the Ferencváros game, talked specifically of players not wanting to be here and players having their eyes on the next move and so on. So I'm putting two and two together and coming up with 400 here, I know, but all these wee kind of clues are starting to fall into place a wee bit with Edward, and I just hope it's not the case.
Well, Neil Lennon says we're not looking to sell him, and Neil Lennon went on to say, I'm hoping he's still a Celtic player by the end of the transfer window, Melly.
Yeah, I tend to disagree with Stephen here. What I took from it was that Neil Lennon mentioned a thing about him agitating for a move or not making any problems behind the scenes, because...
Yeah, there was no reference to a move. He just says he's not causing any problems behind the scenes. He was honest enough to say he was struggling, and I take his word on it.
Yeah, when he says about not making any problems behind the scenes, I think it's just because maybe people do what Stephen done, put two and two together. Odson Edwards not starting, the transfer window is open. That means he must be away, whereas Odson Edwards, a young guy, he's had a start to the season where he's missed a couple of games, went away with his national under-21s, played two games. Maybe he feels he has to play in those games to push on to the senior team. Yeah. Maybe it just wasn't 100% when he'd done that. He's came back, played against St Mirren, wasn't great, I missed a penalty, and maybe it's all had a wee effect on him, because you forget the guy's only 22 years old and we rely on him so much these days. He's the main player. We've had him up front himself for so long and he's had to play every single game. Now we've got a Yeti, we've got Klamala, we've got El Yunusi, we've got options there. We don't need to play him every game like we've done in the past. So maybe it was just taking its toll a bit. rest him up for that game, didn't need to bring him on, and ideally he can have a nice week leading up to a crucial week coming up again for Celtic.
You touched on Edwards' penalty against St Mirren, Melly. It's Stephen, you'd previously complained about the run-up. You'd issued a warning sign on last week's podcast about these run-ups. It's one of these ones, if it goes in, it looks cooler than cool, ice cold. But that one just looked absolutely miserable. A chance to put the game to bed, Melly.
Yeah, it was a chance to put the game to bed. It was a difficult match, a hard-fought one. We let in the early goal and then had to get ourselves back into the game, which we did well, but the penalty would have put a real seal on it. And 3-1, you finish that game 3-1, you maybe think, oh well, that was pretty decent. But the fact that it was only 2-1, maybe the last 10 minutes are a wee bit hairy, it really dampened the performance. Well, it really dampened the result, because the performance wasn't great at all, but we got the victory. And look, that obviously matters, but the performance within that wasn't great.
Steve, we started doing this podcast under Ronnie Dyler's stewardship as manager, and I'll always remember one phrase that was like in the Celtic vernacular. Lexicon is the word I was looking for. The Celtic fan lexicon at that time. The chat around Ronnie Dyler's Celtic team was, they'll kick on, they just need some time to kick on, or they'll kick on up again. When a big game comes up, they'll turn up for that game. Or it's only the 3 points, that's all that matters. And that sort of chat was coming again after the St Mirren game. And I think it's fair to say there's some disquiet among the Celtic fans. Some of it, I think, is just overblown social media bunkum, right, about the way Celtic are playing. Yeah. But there's no denying that, it's, particularly in this game, the performance wasn't great.
No, it wasn't, and I take on board everything you've just said there about the dialer thing. That we spent a long time saying, no, but if it clicks into gear, we're going, and it never came right. The point where, I suppose, we're trying to make here, not putting words in either of your mouths here, because that would just be an unpleasant image for the listeners. The point, I suppose, I am trying to make is that I'm not suggesting for a single second it's going to go the same way as Dyla, where they're never going to click into gear, but I'm talking specifically about this game and the reaction after it. Yes, that a lot of people have been very negative about the team just now. And then there's the other side of that where people just go, 3 points, all that matters, move on. Well, yes and no to that, right? 3 points is undoubtedly the most important thing, but it's not the only important thing, if you know what I mean. How I would explain that is because you'd be daft to watch a game that doesn't go well, you get the 3 points, and just say, right, that's fine, that's the chapter closed, they exist in a vacuum. It's perfectly logical to me to take what happened in that game as a potential indicator for what's going to come in the rest of the season, because Celtic haven't really clicked into gear just now. And watching that game, you think, well, yes, we're getting wins here, but what if the, not so much luck, but what if we don't get one soon? What if, you know, then there was a Livingston game as well where they conceded a goal late on, and it didn't look like Livingston were going to win the game, but they could have drawn it at the end. What if it happens where all of a sudden we just drop points because we're not getting the performance? I'm not saying we have to perform well in every single game out of arrogance or being spoiled. I'm not saying go out and win 5-0 every game. What I mean is performance is also important for these reasons that I'm just listing, because it gives you an indicator of how Celtic are going to play going forward and hopefully get better results going forward. So that I'm just kind of trying to tidy up a few of the thoughts I was having after that game in amongst all the negativity. As far as the negativity itself goes, I don't think people are being like willfully recreationally negative. I don't think people are really enjoying that. I think it's just tense at the moment. I think it was always going to be the case this season. I think we sat down and we all kind of joked about it at the end of last season. Oh, imagine how tense it's going to be. Well, that's the reality. That's what we're in just now, and we need to kind of put up with it, because people want the 10 in a row, and whether they're expressing it in the right ways or not, you know, is entirely up to them. My personal opinion is that people aren't being negative. It's just that they're a bit on edge. And with everything we're experiencing just now, nobody's able to go to the game and vent their frustrations and get into the game.
Oh, you're right, actually. There's probably something in that.
Yeah. They probably feel, certainly from my point of view, you can't be at the game. You can't influence it in that slight way you can by being like getting behind the team or even, it's perfectly valid as well, even moaning at the team when they're not playing well. You can't do that. So people are taking out their aggressions basically on each other and on the team. So I wouldn't go giving anybody a hard time for being negative at the moment. I just think we're all very tense, and we all just think it's going to be a long, very difficult season. I think it's kind of the byproduct of that.
Yeah, we're just touching on the game. The first goal was a poor one to lose, and that's maybe a wee bit of the problem that's seeping in, is we're letting in soft goals right now. I mean, you think Duffy coming in, he maybe strengthened the back line, but it was his man that sort of got away from him, and then Christie's not marking it, Irwin, but the goal's early on. But I quite like Celtic's response to that, because we went in the goal down, it was early on again, but we went at them straight away, and getting that goal from Duffy, look, you see how much a threat he is. Again, if you put decent balls in, which Christie delivered for him, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get goals. Pathetic defending from St Mirren, but that's what you want to see from Duffy. And the second goal as well was another smashing cross from Christie. Forrest gets in with a header, unheard of, but he's in there. It's a smashing header as well. But my worry in that game was the goals we got were from crosses. We weren't creating chances. We weren't opening them up. There was nobody getting to the byline and cutting back or getting a cross in. Forrest and Taylor were really poor that night. And this formation really relies on wing-backs going at players, making things happen and getting balls across. And we just simply didn't do it. That's why it was easy for St Mirren just to camp in there, sit in the bank of four, bank of five, and just soak it up. When Celtic, as we've seen with the Livingston game, look at that one wee pass McGregor in behind for Greg Taylor on the cross. We didn't do that once in the game.
Well, on what you've just said about the goals, I agree with you. I think Celtic were failing largely to create much. There was a moment, a really frustrating moment late on in the game, or in the second half anyway, where Scott Brown took a really advanced role, but he basically had his back to goal on the edge of St Mirren's box, and our defence was like bouncing off him like he was a wall. So they would pass it into Brown and he would lay it back out to Ayer. He'd back into Brown and he would put it back out to Duffy, and it weren't really getting anywhere. It was a lack of penetration. However, what I would say is that at least we can give Celtic credit for finding a plan B, and it was two headers, two crosses and two headers. So that's fine. That's a perfectly valid tactic. I wouldn't like to rely on that going forward, but if it's a game of puzzle solving at the end of the day. If we kind of get past St Mirren one way, we need to find another. And if it's lumping a ball into Shane Duffy for him to be completely unmarked and for him to nod at home, perfectly fine with that as well. Now, I said last week that Duffy decided to score in the previous game. St Mirren kind of made his mind up for him in this case. You can't be giving a guy like that the space he did.
Yeah, nobody attacks the ball with the aggression in there of Shane Duffy that I've seen at Celtic for a long time. Yeah. You name somebody. I can't picture a player that attacks
going
the ball.
Going back to O'Neill's days, weren't you?
Yeah, you're definitely going back to the aggression in which that guy shows. And it's great to have a player with that much confidence. Another thing I think Duffy's brought to the game is it's given Ayer the security to press forward. Ayer's really coming out of his shell. It's quite interesting. One of the things that Blair picked up on, the scout that we hire to do scouting for, is he definitely, you know, he picked that up. He says, you know, Shane Duffy and Christopher Ayer's probably going to be a terrific combination for you. And it's already starting to look like that. Patrick Klamala started the game, Melly. You said beforehand, if he doesn't do it, you know, this was on the preview show that we do on Patreon, you says if Patrick Klamala doesn't do it against St Mirren, then perhaps his time is up for Celtic at Celtic. Do you think that Patrick Klamala done anything in that game? Do you think there's still question marks over him? The way I see it, he's obviously shown something in training because he's getting rewarded with game time. And that's where Neil Lennon works. If you do it in training and you work hard and you do what the manager tells you, you get rewarded with game time. That's the transactional way that Neil Lennon manages his squad. So Klamala's obviously impressing him. We've said before he looks like a guy that's a bit short of confidence. But how far do you push that? How much game time do you give a guy, Melly, when it shows that he's maybe just not got it?
Yeah, as you said, I thought just before, look, I don't want to completely write the guy off, but I've seen him firsthand in a reserve game. I've seen him against Clyde and I wasn't impressed at all. So I thought, look, this game, he's done everything right up to this point and getting into the team. Spoke about it all before, about bulking up over the summer and all that. But if he's not going to do it away from home against St Mirren, when can we expect him to do it? Now, I know he didn't get a lot of great service, but neither did Odson Edward, but he sort of tried to make things happen. But Klamala, I can barely remember him making any significant impact in the game, getting the ball and laying it out. I'm just don't see where it's coming from him. Can he just be a guy that you bring on with a 3-0 up and hope he gets a goal to spur on his confidence? Because at one point we're going to need to rely on him, and already that point's happened and he didn't even get on the pitch against Ferencváros. So I thought, for St Mirren, here's your chance, mate. You're up front with a good strike partner in this formation. You try and make it work for yourself. And he didn't get the service, but he didn't make anything happen for himself either. And that's what I was worried about. And then you just go to the Livingston game. Ayeti had some great hold-up play. Klamala has nothing like that. Nothing like that. And I'm just worried that he's never going to get it.
Oi, Melly, though, I hear the listeners say, it's only one game. And to those people, I would say, leave Melly alone. But what I would also say is, that's what he's got to do, though. That's football. Mm-hmm. That's Celtic. He's got to come in and impress. It might sound terribly harsh, but it's exactly what I've just said about El Yunusi, who's a far more storied, a far more, you know, established international player, international repute player than Klamal is. I've just said the same thing about him earlier on. I said, if you come in, you've got to do something in order to change Neil Lennon's mind and in order to convince Neil Lennon and John Kennedy that you're worth playing. Might sound harsh to judge him on one game, but that's all he's going to get. He's got to come in and do something, and he unfortunately just didn't on this occasion.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the St. Mirren game, it was pretty perfunctory, and Celtic really need to improve on performances like that. And there's things that Celtic need to look at. But there was encouraging moments. You know, McGregor showed signs. Christie was pretty good. James Forrest got himself a goal after being much maligned for the past couple of weeks. Duffy again showing how he fits into the team, and as we might want to look at, you know, Scott Brown's role is definitely evolving in the Celtic team, and having him at the back is maybe letting players like Ayer and especially Ryan Christie get a wee bit more further forward.
Yeah, you're right there. I think we've all had our say on Scott Brown, but we've seen at the weekend just maybe why he's in the team, because he's sitting there, which ahead of him was McGregor and Ncham. McGregor was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You'd love to see him going forward. He obviously gets the goal. He's a slide pass in for Greg Taylor for the second goal. And also in Cham, he was away. It was his good work for the third goal. So maybe we can see why Celtic have got Scott Brown sitting there and then two ahead of him that allows them to go on. Maybe I've said it in the past, I think McGregor could play there. But after that at the weekend, I feel like maybe you're taking away a lot from his game by having him so deep. But I still believe he could play there. I believe Ncham could play there. But it was good against Livingston. There was a lot to divulge into.
Yeah, well, Livingston was a much improved performance. It wasn't perfect again. I think a lot of people were a wee bit down on it again after the game. But I think it was much better. I think there were many more positives to be taken from this game than the St Mirren game. Because let's not forget, Livingston are a difficult team to play against. That's their thing. That's their identity. Yeah, yeah. That's what they thrive on. That's the identity that they revel in. They like to make it tough for teams, especially Celtic. And they like to make the games as ugly as possible, try and grind things down. And they've been successful with it in the past. They've squeezed several draws at Celtic since they've been back in the top flight. I think Celtic have only beaten them twice since 2018, was that? So, and even one of those draws was snatching it from a defeat at Ready the Death from Tom Rogic. So credit to Celtic for being able to overcome something of a bit of a bogey team that Livingston have been in the last couple of years. The midfield, we're talking about Scott Brown, we're talking about Callum McGregor and Cham. I thought the midfield was much better in terms of individual performance. I thought Callum McGregor was excellent. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Christie, much better as well, and Cham, superb. Scott Brown is providing that platform on which people, you know, can develop on to go forward. My one slight issue with it just now is that Celtic lack a little bit of disciplined midfield shape at times without the ball. Yeah. So the central midfield, if you look at things like, if you care about things like the average positions after a game, and I think they're quite interesting because you can gather some information on shape from it. Central midfield doesn't really exist because Scott Brown is very deep. El Hamid is very wide on the right. He filled in as a sort of supplementary right back rather than a right-sided centre back because Frimpong is so far forward. Scott Brown is so deep that he's almost in line with Ayer. So with that, the midfield is quite easily cut through with one or two passes. We're quite an open midfield. So Scott Brown is providing the opportunity for players to get forward. But what Celtic, I think, need to tighten up on is the defensive side of things slightly. Yeah. And that can be worked on. So I think Scott Brown, as much as I'm not going to sit here and do the thing we've been doing for weeks about how, you know, he should be... And in fairness, Neil Lennon has come out and said as much now that he's going to have to be managed and not been in the team so much. I think Scott Brown has to do his defensive job slightly better than he currently is. And that's really kind of all I've got to say on the midfield at the moment. If Neil Lennon is now looking at it and thinking, well, he can't play every game, then that's fine. I fully support that. It's just that he's lacking a little bit of defensive discipline and awareness at times. There was a point in the Livingston game where I thought he probably could have been taken off because he had become a bit of a defensive liability. Seems like a strong word, but I think he was towards the end, because being 35, he's going to tire dealing with an intense game, which we were. So I think he could have been taken off before long. But overall, I was actually pretty happy with the Livingston performance. I thought, as I said, the midfielders that I've listed were absolutely excellent. Ayeti, what I've said about him recently. Doesn't he need ass twice to stick the ball in the back of the net? Even when he's not, like, massively...
I thought you were going to say Ayeti there.
I'll be in Ayeti. What, you mean I'll be on the score sheet? Am I right?
Oh, see what I've done there? Rotten. Absolutely terrible.
Like, even when he's not massively involved, he still scores and he still holds the ball up extremely well. He's offside quite a lot, I'll be in Ayeti, but that's a gamble I'm willing to deal with. Like, if he's offside on 3 or 4 occasions because he's one of those guys who plays on the very edge, on the off chance that he's going to get through and get a chance, then that's where he belongs.
That's his house. Let's talk about the penalty shout, though. Let's talk about Celtic's penalty shout. Celtic went up the pitch. There was a penalty shout for us. Livingston then went up the pitch, and there's a penalty shout for them. They got theirs. I think those two incidents were almost identical.
One key difference for me in that the Livingston handball was a secondary incident. What I mean by that is it came off the player and then onto his hand on the way down, whereas Ayers on the other end was a full-on handball. Very, very similar, but that's the only slight but important difference, that the important distinction to be made. I can understand the difference in the decision making with them, if you know what I mean. Like, to the letter of the law, to me, if you're going to give a handball because it hits a guy's hand, regardless of circumstances, then they are both penalties. Yeah. But that's the only mitigating circumstance I would point to, I suppose, in this occasion.
I thought our penalty shout was iffy. What I'm more concerned about, though, is how they ended up getting the penalty. The ball comes in and Ayer doesn't win the header in the first instance. Scott Brown, the ball bobbles out. Scott Brown doesn't get his interception. Mm. I think it was might have been Marvin Bartley that then played the ball forward, and Ayers just caught out of position, so he's having to run back into position, slide to stop the cross, and it hits off his arm. I thought it was really, really unfair. It's one of these ones where when you're sliding like that, you're not in full control of your body, so where do you put your hand? Your hand has to be places to balance yourself off. You can't like slide like you're putting your hands by your side like being a pencil, like jumping into the pool. Do you know what I mean? Like, your hands have to be somewhere.
Are you citing biomechanics here, Matt?
I'm citing biomechanics.
He just didn't bring it up at half time. I was disappointed in him. Really disappointed.
He's probably been well warned off it. And then upsteps that wee hun, Jason Holt.
Former Gels ace, Jason Holt, to stick in the back of the net. On the penalty itself, a final thing on that. I suppose playing dick advocate here, playing devil's advocate, what I would say is that Ayer's intention there is to block the ball, and he did, but he used his hand. Deliberately or not, do you know what I mean? It's like, he set about his goal in blocking the ball, but he just happened to use an illegal body part.
So isn't he good then?
Yeah.
Are you trying to defend Ayer on this one? Or are you criticising him?
No, that's not right. I'm saying it is a penalty because what he tried to do.
I see what you mean. I thought this was some sort of terrible mounted defence of Christopher Ayer.
No, mealy-mouthed defence of Christopher Ayer. No, I think there was a lot of shouts. I think it's just become a kind of catchphrase that's caught on, the fact that he went to ground on that occasion and handballed it as a result. But
yeah,
I think on that occasion you have to go to ground because you have to stop that cross. Unfortunately, it hit his hand.
This is where an analyst might wind the tape back though and go, but why did you have to go to ground? Well, you went to ground because you missed your header and then you were ball watching. Because what happened was, I can't remember Livingston player, but Ayer failed to win the header off of him, and the boy stand in front of Ayer. The ball goes ahead, and all he does is just walk around behind Ayer, where he's got loads of space between the Celtic goal, and there's no Ayer, and then Marvin Bartley just plays a simple wee knock over the top, and because Ayer's miles off base, I think that's where they would look at it.
But when it gets to that point, he can't then go, well, I should have made the decision previously, correct? I can't do anything.
He can't do a tenant and reverse back and take the ball off that boy. You think Barker should have saved it?
I think he smashed it in, basically. I think that's what you do with a penalty, odds on.
Yeah, you're telling Odson Edward to take penalty lessons off Jason
study
Holt.
Study the tape of Jason Holt in your spare time, Odson.
We got the goal back, you know, within a couple of minutes, and again, it was Christopher Ayer pressing out of defence again with Scott Brown and Shane Duffy, and they're offering plenty of cover, allowing it to do that. Plays it directly to Ayeti's feet, who more or less plays it off of, plays in Callum McGregor with an absolutely terrific shot. Don't care that it took a deflection. I'll take them all, but it was a rasper.
Yeah, it was a peach. It was net bound anyway, I'd say. It was good build-up play. That's, as you said, that's what we've seen from Ayer, a sort of tone for his earlier mistake. And you can see that this is what he brings to the team. When there's a back three, he can press right in there. Scott Brown can just slide across. It was good play. And it was good to get the goal so quickly after they'd scored, because maybe, as Stephen talked about, there is a bit of tension. But in the whole game, Livingston didn't create many chances and Celtic were pretty dominant, I thought, much better. And just that goal, as soon as Celtic score that, you go, right, that's it. We're on to one here. We'll go at them and they'll crumble, because Celtic, I thought they'd started pretty well in the game. They didn't maybe create a great chance or two, but we were playing the ball quickly across from side to side trying to get in. And I think Frimpong made the big difference down the right-hand side, because he is so direct and he's willing to take players on, something maybe Forrest is lacking right now.
That quickness is the key. That's the key to the way Celtic want to play. I'm not talking about the speed of Frimpong. I'm going to talk about Frimpong in a sec. But that quickness of movement, moving the ball forward quickly, moving yourself out of position or into position quickly, that is the key to the way that Neil Lennon wants to play. And that's the key to the way this system needs to work. If you're Gary Holt, you're looking at your right back there. The right back did the right thing by putting his hands behind his back so he didn't concede a penalty. But he also turned himself side on to make himself as small as possible. So you need to take that right in the coupon. Frimpong needs to play every week, doesn't he, Stephen?
Oh, 100%. If we're going to stick with this formation, this system, Frimpong is as close to a first name in the team sheet as he can possibly get, because he's quite simply, it's not particularly insightful from him, but he's the best option for the position. I know James Forrest is a good player and all that, but as far as being a right wing back goes, Frimpong's got him in almost every department. He's a far better option for that role. The only thing that Frimpong doesn't offer on that side, in that particular role, and again, I would say that being a right winger and being a right wing back and being a right back are all different positions. They're not as interchangeable as people might suggest. I don't think he doesn't carry the goal threat that James Forrest does. And Scott Brown has joked in the past about how terrible he is at shooting, Jeremy Frimpong. And if Scott Brown is slagging you for that, goodness me. But other than the goal threat, he is as close to as ideal a player as Celtic are going to have for that position. He has to play if it's going to be a 3-5-2.
I really like the overload we get on the right-hand side when Elhamid's playing, because Elhamid's got great feet as well. So see, when someone comes out to meet Elhamid, he's got a touch or a turn. He's really, really good. He's got quick feet and he's great at playing me from his through, Melly.
Yeah, you're right. He's so ideal for that right-hand side of the back three. That's why when we spoke about Ayer recently, if we have Elhamid there, maybe Ayer, see if we had somebody like the equivalent of Elhamid, just left-footed, that's able to run out. Ayer's really good at it, but he's so right-footed, it maybe hinders that. But Elhamid, not so great against St Mirren, a lot of loose passes, but back at it again at the weekend, I thought he was really good, and he got forward as well, and the introduction of Duffy allows him to do that as well. He's not scared to get forward, because he has a centre-half and a right-back, and Frimpong, as I spoke about earlier, he's ideal for that right wing back. You need that. You need somebody that's going to be willing to take guys on, get past them, use their pace. And he done it time and time again during the game. He was great. He's great to watch as well. And I felt towards the end of the game, when we made the substitutions and Forrest came on, we really lost something from the game when his pace was taken out of it.
You know, Greg Taylor's came in for a lot of stick. I think he completed two crosses in the whole game, which was actually more than anyone else completed. And we've sort of mentioned it earlier on in the podcast that we don't think he's particularly good enough. And what I find with Greg Taylor's perhaps lacking ability and Callum McGregor being as good and as an experienced player as he is, Callum McGregor spends a lot of time out in that left-hand side offering an option to Greg Taylor because he knows Greg Taylor needs it. But that's exactly how Celtic's second goal came about. But McGregor's ball through for Greg Taylor for the cross was absolutely perfect, Melly.
Yeah, it was a great slide ball through. And to be fair to Taylor, it was a great run as well. He checked in and then he just went right behind the guy just on his blind side. And McGregor's slide ball through is brilliant. As well, when the ball goes across, the Livingston player is claiming for offside. And that's how that split second where he puts his arm up and delays allows Christie to get ahead and just get in front of him. When I first seen the goal, I just instantly thought, oh, that's a Yeti, because it was a striker's goal, striker's instinct to be in there at the front post. But it was Christie, and because he was playing up front in that game, I thought he did pretty well, considering he's a lot better up there when he's got a partner beside him. But as you said, McGregor and Taylor, brilliant. But there's just a few instances in the game where Taylor got into that position, but he didn't look up before he played the ball. It's just sort of hopeful balls. That's something that he really needs to work on. He can't just be hopefully putting it across, because 8 times out of 10, probably there's going to be a Celtic player looking for the cutback, or there is going to be an option, but he's just not picking that out right now.
Let's talk about the pick of the goals. I'll be in a Yeti. Cham does that really, really good thing where he looks over his shoulder as if he's going to take a touch, but just lets the ball run across his body, and then he presses it into midfield with it. Gives the ball to Ryan Christie, who I thought was excellent on the day as well. Ryan Christie with a beautiful weighted ball through, and Albion Ayeti doesn't even blink, man. This is in the back of the net before the keeper knows what's happening. Tremendous finish. Cadet-like. That was cadet-like, that finish.
Well, you don't save those, and as I said earlier, Ayeti doesn't need to ask twice. He's just going to stick that in the back of the net before anyone has any chance to react to it. Brilliant from Christie, as you say, because it was crucial that he got the ball out of his feet as quickly as he did to send Ayeti through. He received the pass and moved it on immediately in a sort of two-touch motion and put Ayeti through. Such was the quality of the ball. Ayeti being the quality of finisher that he is, he knows he's as good as scored, because the keeper comes out, commits himself, and Ayeti just has to pick his spot. Picked his spot right in the top bin from 18 yards, right enough. But what was that, 4 goals he's got so far?
Four goals in five games. Him and Edward are both sitting on 4 and 5 games. The two top scorers in the league. I know Ryan Kent and Nisbet have got 4 goals as well, but they've played many more games.
He's just so instinctive, isn't he? He's there in the position, and he's just that good that I don't even think he even thinks about it. It doesn't go through his head that keeper's coming out, I'll just lift it round him and past him. I think it's just bang, go, and that's him. He doesn't have to think about it, and that's what you want from your striker. You don't want somebody that's going to second guess themselves, like Klamala when he went through recently, that one-on-one where he never looked like scoring against Motherwell, was it? He just never looked like scoring and didn't know what he was going to do. Whereas Ayeti, I wouldn't have any trouble with him going through on that, and I just think if he misses, he'll get the next one because he's just so instinctive. He just likes finishing first time, and he's starting to build up that match fitness as well. So he got 75 minutes there at the weekend. Yeah. So once we get him flying,
Well, what links his goals so far, bar one, is that they were all first time finishes. They were all first touch, apart from one where it was as good as. He took one touch to get it out from under his feet and then just smashed it in anyway. So there's zero hesitation on any of his goals yet. Again, I don't want to be unfair on Klamala, but I just use it as the comparison. Klamala takes his time, often too much time, and loses chances.
His confidence, isn't it? Yeah, that's all it is with
Ayeti Klamala. Is the mirror opposite. And he quality. Just smashes the ball in without even thinking
about
it.
And quality, well. Yeah, and obviously, yeah. Talking about finishes, we need to give some credit to Julian Serrano. He went ham on that there, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Come to me for your puns. He went ham on that, didn't he? I want to know how his career trajectory took him from Monaco, as John Collins would say, to Livingston. But it was an absolute stormer.
Yes, it's just one of those goals where you think there's not a lot you can do about it. I've watched it back again and it sort of bounced off. It's a good 1-2 in midfield and then he just gets out his feet and smashes it. I think that goal wasn't... The first one was avoidable, as we spoke about with the Ayer thing. Scott Brown gets the wrong side when he goes to tackle and all that sort of thing. But with this one, you just need to hold your hands up sometime. I think I know every goal's avoidable, but that was an absolute rasper. And taking that goal away, I know it's a bit silly, but taking the goal out, there was nothing in that game that suggested Livingston were ever getting back into that game when it was 3-1 to Celtic. If anything, Celtic were pressing on, trying to get more goals. We made the substitutions as well. And I just felt that 3-1, fine, but hopefully we can get a fourth goal. Just when that goal goes in, it's maybe a wee bit of a worry, but I just don't ever feel like Livingston were ever getting in out of the game. That's just that absolute screamer of a goal. Just maybe put a wee bit of doubt in. And when you look over the whole performance, Celtic were really good. And it's a penalty and a screamer. It's not as if they carved us open or created many more chances.
I know I watched like the Pass to Paradise, but see when they were talking about how like a nervy last couple of minutes for Celtic and all that, I thought to myself, I don't see this at all. I didn't think this was one chance
with the header, didn't they?
That's right, yeah.
Didn't think it was nervy for Celtic. You know, as you say, every goal's avoidable. I had a wee watch that again, and I suppose if you wanted to offer some criticism, you could criticise Forrest for maybe not closing his guy down. Scott Brown again is running into a useless space instead of marking the guy. There was a lot of criticism directed at, I thought was quite funny, there was a lot of criticism directed at Barkas for not saving it, because I think when you watch it from a certain angle it looks as though it's headed directly into Barkas's palms, but the problem you have there is I think the ball was going in one direction for about 20 yards and then 4 yards from Barkas's goal it just swings entirely out of his control. There was nothing he could have done about that.
I mean, very few keepers are going to save that. Ultimately, it's a very difficult, and sometimes it's just a belter of a goal.
Yeah.
It's not as if it was a Kepa where you think money.
Kepa, goodness me, the world's most expensive goalkeeper of all time.
I'm starting to feel sorry for him, man. I do feel sorry for him. It's horrible watching it.
A man of the match performance in that game, well deserved by Callum McGregor. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there was
competition for it, but I'm not going to argue against it. Could have been Christie, could have been, it could have been possibly Jam.
Frimpong.
But that's what you want. You want people arguing over the man of the match, but McGregor took it, and I've got no arguments against that because he is my pick for player of the year.
Agenda.
Right. About time he turned it on. He obviously listened. It's probably what spurred him on. And speaking of people who must have been listening last week to our podcast, Duffy and Forrest both on the score sheet after I dared Duffy to outscore Forrest. So he took the mantle, stepped up to the plate and scored. And Forrest, not to be outdone, goes and gets himself back leveled up. I know, they're both on two. Anything Duffy can do, Forrest can do, well, not quite good, but he did it anyway. So, yeah, that competition is really hotting up. Both on two goals.
I think really that's a good shout. That's a terrific shout. You know, who's going to get more goals this season, Duffy or James Forrest? I feel sorry for James Forrest pitting him against a central defender, but, you know, them's the breaks.
Yeah. Nice to see Forrest coming on alongside his brother as well.
That was, of course, Celtic's opportunity to play some games in hand that they had because of, well, I can't remember why, and go top of the league for at least a couple of hours, provided Rangers didn't drop points, and that's exactly what they've done. The Huns blinked once or twice. I don't really know how he measures it. A lot of people had eyes on that game for Rangers away, and it just gives you a warm feeling all over it, doesn't it? Because Steven Gerrard can't help himself. He was in the immediately after the game, he's moaning about Ryan Porteous being unprofessional or unsportsmanlike or something like that. And that's when you know it's getting to him.
Yeah, I think like a few weeks ago we were sitting here going, we could be 11 points behind Rangers before we next play. Now we're a point behind with a game in hand. It shows how quickly things can change. Yeah. And look, Rangers, after the record-breaking start to the season, well, they're not far ahead of us. They've not spurred ahead of us in goals. We have let in a couple of silly ones, but we have clawed back that gap, and we have yet to hit our stride. Once we are settled in getting into this run of games now, I think Celtic's performances will start to improve, and if we're getting results without the performances now, we can improve on that. But Rangers, I think they have had a harder start to the season fixture-wise. They've played Aberdeen away, Hibs away, Livingston away, but in two of the games I expected them to drop points in, they've done that already. Look, this record-breaking start's maybe not as good, and if Celtic do hit their stride in the next couple of weeks and then before we play them, it's going to get very interesting, boys.
Here's what I want to say for Celtic, Stephen. I think that a lot of our performances have been a result of having better players. Better players have carried us through rather than the better system and looking well coached. And some of the performances and the coach are on show, specifically against likes of Ferencváros, worried me a wee bit. Yeah. I've watched Rangers this season. They're not a good team. In fact, I think it may be the opposite for Rangers. I think they rely an awful lot on Ryan Kent. They rely on him an awful lot, but they look pretty well organised. So I think what they are is a team with less good players who are perhaps better organised and that's helping carry them through the games, whereas we're a team with much better players who are perhaps slightly less organised, not than Rangers. I'm not comparing us to Rangers in that half. I'm just saying that's how I think our games are playing out.
If you were, you wouldn't be out of order in saying that. I think we can take from the early part of the season that Rangers, you know, they have conceded fewer goals. That's the first goals they've conceded all season. So I don't think you're being outrageous to say that they've had a decent bit of organisation in the early part of the season. However, the iron curtain has now fallen. They have conceded goals, and I fully expect the floodgates to open.
Before we wrap up, I think it's only right that we draw the winner of the gold badge for the best review. If you've been following us, we're trying to get reviews on iTunes on Podcast Addict. It really helps us out a lot. It takes literally 2 seconds on your phone to leave us a review. So the best, funniest, our favourite review of the week, leave a 5-star review, leave your Twitter name so we can contact you.
Yes.
What was this week's winner?
Okay, I like this one this week. Nick Hooper67 says, "The toast and cheese of podcasts. Comfort listening from boys in the know." Nick Hooper67. So that's a nice one.
There we go. Nick wins. I'll tell you what. Yeah. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut it off right here because I don't want to enter in that tired old toasted cheese, roasted cheese, toast and cheese, toast on cheese.
He wins
debate.
Because he didn't say roasted cheese, actually. Aye. He called it toast and cheese like a.
You would have fucked it for yourself if you said roasted cheese, right? And on that bombshell, we shall end. I just want to say thank you very much to everyone who listens and leaves us reviews and especially subscribes on Patreon. It's enormously welcoming and we really appreciate it. Stephen, would you like to sign off with something quick and witty?
Yes, yeah, so not so quick, but what I was going to say, I was going to thank everyone for donating to our appeal last week. We put out the tweet for the Alzheimer's fundraiser that we're trying to help out with. So today is World Alzheimer's Day, folks. So I'm on your case again. If you could please donate to that, we'll tweet out the details. We're running a wee competition for it as well for a signed copy of Chris Sutton's book. But it's not about the competition. It's about supporting an important cause. So again, we'll put it out on the social medias if you could please get involved with that. Thank you.
Neither quick nor witty. Melly, would you like to have a go?
Cheers for your ears, folks. And just lastly, before we go, a happy birthday to Stephen, who will be celebrating his birthday tomorrow, Tuesday, as you listen.
Oh, there you go. I'm so glad you reminded me to text him, Melly. Thanks very much. I'll text him in the morning.
It's really nice when you're sitting doing a podcast with your mates and they remember it's your birthday. That's really nice, isn't it?
When is your birthday? Next year?
Yes.
Still 30s, by the way. Still
30s. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.